Welcome to this deep dive. Today we're going way back in time to ancient Jerusalem. Around 750 BC, we're going to hang out with the prophet Micah.
Ooh, fun.
Well, specifically, we've got Dr. Perry Phillips' commentary on Micah chapter 3.
Okay.
And this chapter, let me tell you, it's pretty intense.
It's a powerful one, for sure.
Yeah, and it feels really relevant, even today.
Yeah, it's amazing how Micah, you know, thousands of years ago, was wrestling with issues that are still so front and center for us today. You know, corruption, social justice, what it really means to be a good leader.
Yeah. So picture Jerusalem back then. It wasn't exactly a utopia. Micah paints this really stark picture of a society just riddled with corruption.
Yeah.
The leaders, the prophets, even the priests. It seems like they're more interested in lining their own pockets than serving the people or upholding justice.
Yeah. And to really drive home this point, Dr. Phillips points out that Micah uses this clever literary technique in this chapter called chiastic structure. It's like this ABBA pattern where concepts are mirrored to emphasize, you know, so Micah condemns the rulers, then he moves on to the prophets, and then he circles right back to the rulers again.
Wow, this vivid imagery of tearing flesh that Micah uses to describe the leaders.
Yeah.
That's really disturbing. It's not subtle, is it?
No, not at all.
Look, what does he actually say?
Well, he accuses them of, you know, hating good and loving evil. He says they're tearing off the skin and even the flesh from the bones of the people that they're supposed to be leading and protecting.
It's like he's saying they're not just bad leaders. They're acting like wild animals preying on the vulnerable.
Precisely. And Dr. Phillips points out that the Hebrew word gazal, the word that's used here for, you know, tearing away land and property, it's the same word that's used to describe the actions of a predator, you know, like a lion tearing its prey.
Wow. You know, that makes me think about how we still use that kind of language today. We talk about corporations or powerful people gobbling up resources or devouring smaller companies.
Right.
It's like this primal instinct, you know, to take what you can, even if it hurts other people.
That's a great connection.
Yeah.
Micah is tapping into something very fundamental about human nature, I think, about the potential for power to corrupt. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the context of ancient Israel, being stripped of your land, it wasn't just an economic blow. It was an existential threat.
Mm.
Land was tied to your inheritance, your family lineage, even your tribe's connection to God.
It's like taking away someone's identity, their whole sense of belonging. And Micah doesn't let these leaders off easy, does he? He says when they find themselves in trouble, they're going to cry out to God for help.
Yeah.
But crickets. Because they ignored the cries of the people they were oppressing.
Exactly. Micah is laying down this principle of measure for measure justice. What you sow is what you reap.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, and you see this idea of what scholars call lex talionis all over the Bible. It emphasizes that our actions has consequences. It makes me think about the concept of karma. What goes around comes around.
So the leaders are in Micah's crosshairs, but then he turns his attention to the prophets, right?
Right.
Are they any better?
Unfortunately, not so much. Micah calls them out for being just as bad as the corrupt leaders. Basically, they're telling people what they want to hear. You know, a good fortune cookie for those who pay up and a dire prediction for those who don't.
So they're essentially religious hucksters, more interested in lining their own pockets than speaking truth. What a betrayal of trust. I mean, does it make you wonder, was Micah being overly dramatic, or is this really a reflection of like the brutal reality of the time?
Well, Dr. Phillips brings up this fascinating detail about the Hebrew word for bite that Micah uses to describe how these false prophets latch onto those who don't pay them. And that same word is connected to the prohibition against lending money with interest.
Wait, so there's a link being made between economic exploitation, like predatory lending, and false prophecy. That's a pretty thought-provoking connection.
It certainly raises some questions about how different forms of abuse of power can be interconnected. Maybe Micah is suggesting that greed, whether it's political corruption or religious manipulation or economic exploitation, it's all part of the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that greed can warp our ability to see the truth, to speak the truth, to act with integrity.
In the middle of all this doom and gloom, Micah himself stands out. He's like this beacon of what a true prophet should be. He's filled with God's spirit, and he's not afraid to speak truth to power. He's not mincing words, is he?
Not at all. And Dr. Phillips highlights that Micah's repeated use of the phrase, my people, throughout the book, you know, reveals his deep personal identification with those who are suffering. Micah isn't just up on a soapbox delivering a message. He's deeply affected by the injustice he sees.
Yeah, it's like he's saying, you know, I'm one of you, I feel your pain.
Exactly.
And that makes his message all the more powerful and authentic. But Micah doesn't just call out the prophets and move on, does he? He circles back to the leaders again, and this time it gets even more intense.
You're right. He accuses them of building Jerusalem with bloodshed and violent injustice.
Yeah.
He's likely referencing the forced displacement and land grabbing that was happening at the time, probably to make way for, you know, urban renewal projects. It was a time of expansion and prosperity under King Uzziah. But it seems that prosperity came at a high cost for the poor and the marginalized.
And Dr. Phillips makes this fascinating connection to modern-day Jerusalem.
Yeah.
He brings up archaeological evidence of houses that were demolished to build this massive wall during the reign of King Hezekiah, a king who's usually considered a good one.
It makes you think, right? Even leaders who are generally seen as virtuous can still make choices that perpetuate injustice.
Yeah.
Sometimes the ends justify the means isn't as clear-cut as it seems.
So Micah is basically outlining this unholy trinity of corruption. Leaders taking bribes,
yeah.
Priests charging for instruction, and prophets, you know, giving you a good prophecy for a price.
Right. And Dr. Phillips points out that Micah uses three different words for taking money: bribe, price, and money. It's like he's emphasizing just how pervasive this greed is. It's infected every level of society.
Wow.
This insatiable desire for wealth and power. It seems to be at the root of all this corruption.
And Micah doesn't just deliver a diagnosis, though.
Mm.
He ends the chapter with this pretty stark warning about the consequences of this corruption, doesn't he?
Yes, he delivers this chilling prophecy that because of the corruption of the leaders, the prophets, and the priests, Jerusalem will be destroyed, plowed like a field.
That's some intense imagery. A city being plowed like a field. And then Dr. Phillips points out this one really thought-provoking detail. That image of the mountain of the temple becoming a high place for a forest. What does that even mean?
It's interesting, isn't it? It's ambiguous. Does it represent a return to nature and true worship? Or is it like a desolate wasteland? It's almost like Micah is saying, look, you're headed for destruction, but there's also this potential for renewal. It all depends on what you choose to do.
So we've got this vivid picture of corruption, this chilling prophecy of judgment. But what does it all mean for us? We're sitting here thousands of years later, listening to this. It can't just be an ancient history lesson, can it?
Absolutely not. Micah's message might have been delivered centuries ago, but it's still incredibly relevant today. It's like he's holding up a mirror to our own societies, our own institutions, even our own hearts.
It makes you think, where do we see abuses of power happening today?
Mm-hmm.
Are we turning a blind eye to injustice, like the people in Micah's time?
Yeah.
Or are we actively working to build a more just and equitable world? It's a challenge, isn't it?
It is. And I think one of the most powerful things about Micah's message is that it's not just about condemning corruption. It's about calling us to live differently,
yeah.
To build a more just and compassionate world.
And in the next part of our deep dive, we're going to explore some specific examples of how Micah's message can be applied to our lives and the challenges that we're facing in the 21st century. Stay tuned. It would be easy to just walk away from Micah chapter 3 feeling, you know, completely discouraged.
Yeah.
I mean, corruption everywhere you look, a society on the brink of collapse. It's pretty bleak. But what I find so fascinating is that Dr. Phillips doesn't leave us there in that pit of despair. He actually highlights Micah's own courage and integrity as a model for how we can respond to corruption and injustice.
Yeah, what's so inspiring about Micah is that he could have easily just thrown up his hands and said, you know what, this is hopeless, this society is too far gone.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He keeps speaking truth to power, even when it seems like no one is listening.
It's easy to feel overwhelmed, isn't it? Like the problems we're facing today, political corruption, economic inequality, climate change, they're just so huge. It's like, where do you even begin? But Micah's example is like, hey, even small acts of resistance, small acts of speaking truth can make a difference.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that Micah wasn't some kind of superhero.
Right.
He was a regular person who was deeply troubled by what he saw happening around him. He felt the pain of his people, and he couldn't stay silent. I think that's something we can all relate to. Have you ever been in a situation where you saw something wrong happening and you knew you had to speak up even if it was uncomfortable?
Oh, totally. I think we've all had those moments where you're like, okay, I can't just sit here and say nothing.
Yeah.
But it can be scary, right? To go against the grain, to challenge the status quo. But Micah's story gives me courage, though. It's like if he could do it, facing down kings and corrupt prophets, then surely we can find ways to speak truth to power in our own lives.
Exactly. And, you know, if we connect this back to the bigger picture, Micah's message isn't just about calling out bad behavior. It's about inspiring us to live differently, to build a more just and compassionate world.
That's a message that never gets old, does it? It was true 2,700 years ago, and it's still true today. Okay, but before we get too carried away with the big picture, I want to go back to some of the specific details in Micah chapter 3. There's one passage that really stuck with me. It's the part where Micah accuses the leaders of building Jerusalem with bloodshed and violent injustice. What was going on there?
Well, Dr. Phillips suggests that Micah is probably talking about the practice of land grabbing and forced displacement that was happening during that time of economic expansion, you know, under King Uzziah. It's a reminder that, you know, progress often comes at a cost, and it's usually the most vulnerable who end up paying the price.
So even though the kingdom was prospering, it was happening on the backs of the poor and the marginalized.
That's right. It seems the leaders were using their power to enrich themselves. And to expand their own properties, even if it meant pushing people off their land. And Dr. Phillips makes this fascinating connection to the concept of eminent domain. That's when a government takes private property for public use, even if the owner doesn't want to sell.
You know, that example of the houses being torn down to build the wall in Jerusalem, it really brings it home, doesn't it? It's like this kind of injustice isn't just something that happened in the distant past. Yeah. It's still happening today, just in different forms.
It is. Think about gentrification, for example, where rising property values and development projects can push longtime residents out of their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Or think about how indigenous communities around the world are still being displaced from their ancestral lands. It's like Micah is giving us this lens to see how these same patterns of exploitation and injustice just keep repeating themselves throughout history.
It makes you wonder, are there unholy trinities of corruption happening right now, right under our noses? Micah's unholy trinity, corrupt leaders, prophets for profit, and priests who charge for instruction. It's like this blueprint for how power can be abused, isn't it?
It is, and it's a reminder that corruption can infect any part of society. Political systems, religious institutions, even economic structures, it's not limited to one group or one time period.
Okay, so let's play this out. If Micah was dropped into our world today, where would he see those same dynamics playing out? I mean, we don't have prophets and priests in the same way anymore, but we definitely have people in positions of power and authority who abuse that power for their own gain.
Absolutely. Think about politicians who put the interests of their donors ahead of the needs of their constituents, or religious leaders who exploit their followers, or CEOs who prioritize short-term profits over the well-being of their employees or the environment.
It's like that saying, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely. Mike is reminding us that we need to be vigilant, to hold those in power accountable, and to speak out against injustice wherever we see it. It can be easy to get cynical, though, can't it? When you see so much corruption and greed, it's tempting to just throw up your hands and say, what's the point?
I understand that feeling, but I think Micah's message is ultimately one of hope. Yes, he paints a stark picture of the consequences of corruption, but he also calls us to a different way of living. Yeah. He calls us to practice justice, to show compassion, and to live with integrity.
It's not enough to just point fingers and complain, is it? We have to actually do something to make things better.
Exactly. Micah's message isn't just about condemning the bad guys. It's about inspiring us to be the good guys, to be the change we want to see in the world.
So how do we take Micah's message, this ancient text from thousands of years ago, and translate it into concrete action in our own lives? It's easy to feel overwhelmed, like one person can't make a difference. But Micah's example reminds us that even small acts of resistance can have an impact. What are some practical steps we can take to really embody Micah's call to justice and integrity?
That's a great question, and one that I think we can delve into even further in the final part of our deep dive. But here's something to think about in the meantime. Micah reminds us that true prophecy isn't just about predicting the future. It's about speaking truth to power, challenging injustice, and living in a way that reflects God's heart for the marginalized and oppressed. So I would ask you, what does it mean to be a prophet in your own sphere of influence? What are the injustices that you see happening around you? And what are some ways you can use your voice, your resources, your actions to make a difference?
That's such a powerful question. You know, it's easy to think of prophecy as something mystical,
right,
and out of reach. But you're right, at its core, it's really about speaking truth and standing up for what's right, even in our everyday lives.
Exactly. It's something we can all do in our own ways, in our own communities. Mm-hmm. We might not be writing books of the Bible,
Right.
But we can use our voices to advocate for justice, to call out corruption, and to support those who are being marginalized.
Okay, so let's brainstorm some real-world examples.
Wow.
What are some practical ways that we can be prophets in our everyday lives? What would that even look like?
Well, it starts with being aware. You know, we need to educate ourselves about the issues that are affecting our communities and the systems that perpetuate inequality.
Mm.
You know, Micah was so turned in to the suffering of his people, he couldn't just ignore it.
Right.
We need to open our eyes to the needs around us.
Sometimes it feels like there's just so much going on in the world. You know,
yeah.
It's easy to feel overwhelmed. Like, where do you even begin? But you're right. Awareness is the first step.
Right.
Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Exactly. And once we're aware, we can start speaking up. That might mean having those tough conversations with family and friends.
Hmm.
Writing to your elected officials, supporting organizations that are working for change.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be these huge sweeping gestures.
Sometimes it's the little things, right? Like standing up for someone who's being treated unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
Just a small act of kindness can be a powerful form of prophecy.
Exactly. It's about living out those values of justice, compassion, and integrity. You know, Micah wasn't just condemning corruption. He was offering a vision for a better way of living.
So it's not just about being against something, but being for something.
Right.
How can we actively build a more just and equitable world?
Well, we can start by looking in the mirror. Are we living in a way that reflects those values? Are we treating others with fairness and respect, even those who are different from us?
It's like Dr. Phillips said, creed and conduct should be consistent.
Right.
Our actions have to match our beliefs.
Yeah, and we can look for ways to support those initiatives that are trying to make a real difference, you know? Mm. Volunteering our time, donating to causes we believe in, or even being mindful of how we spend our money.
Yeah.
Supporting businesses that align with our values.
It's like voting with your wallet. Every choice we make, even down to what we buy, can be a statement about the kind of world we want to see.
Right. Micah reminds us that God desires something better for us, a world where justice flows like water and righteousness, like a mighty stream.
It's easy to get caught up in the negativity, but that vision that Micah lays out, that's powerful. It gives me hope.
And it's up to all of us to play our part in making that vision a reality. Micah's message is a call to action, a reminder that we all have a role to play in building a more just and compassionate world.
Well, this deep dive has been a real eye-opener for me. Micah's words, though, spoken thousands of years ago, feel so incredibly relevant today.
Mm-hmm.
It's challenging, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's also really inspiring. It's a reminder that we can all be prophets in our own way.
Mm.
We can all make a difference.
Absolutely. And as you go about your day, I'd encourage you to think about this. What can you do in your own sphere of influence to be a voice for justice and a force for positive change? Remember, even small acts of courage and compassion can have a ripple effect, creating a more just and equitable world for everyone.